Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Cancer clinical trials are essential to finding new therapies and improving outcomes. However, with a range of trial types and processes, patients often have many questions. Are trials safe? Will I get a placebo? Will my trial lead to an FDA approval? In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast, we ask all these common questions to Dr. Suzanne George, Clinical Director, Center for Sarcoma and Bone Oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Dr. George is currently leading a trial for patients with a rare sarcoma subtype called gastrointestinal stromal tumors, and highlights the importance of the trial participation and what patients can expect.
My name is Suzanne George. I'm a medical oncologist at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. My focus is on sarcomas, which are a rare subset of cancers. In my role, I'm also the director of clinical research for our program, for the sarcoma program. I have spent my career really focused on the clinical management of patients with sarcomas, and that includes a tumor type called GIST, or gastrointestinal stromal tumor. And I've also had the opportunity and privilege really to be involved in clinical trials in this space and have been involved in pivotal trials that have led to the FDA approval of new drugs for the treatment of diseases that previously never had treatments available.
That's great. So when a patient enrolls in a clinical trial, or if they're thinking about enrolling, what can they expect as far as the care on a clinical trial goes?
It's a really good question. And I would start by saying there's lots of different types of clinical trials, and every trial is a bit different. So there are, I think about trials in a couple of different baskets, let's say. There's therapeutic clinical trials, and those are trials that are typically evaluating new drugs or new treatments. And then there's database type trials, which are trials in which patients can give permission to allow their information to be included in a larger database that researchers can come in and study. And that information can include, prior biopsies, prior tumor tissue, blood samples, plasma samples, imaging, medical record review. So that's a different clinical trial to participate in than a therapeutic trial where you're using a new drug. And then there are other types of trials, looking at genetics and genomics and not necessarily involving a new treatment, but just perhaps studying quality of life or studying lifestyle intervention. So there's many different types of trials. With that said, there are some overarching principles in trial participation. The first and foremost is that participation in any clinical trial is completely voluntary, and it's absolutely up to the patient to decide and the participant to decide if it's the right fit for them. Clinical trials will start with a consent form, which is or a consenting process. And that's really the patient has the opportunity to learn about the trial. What type of trial is it? What are the goals and objectives of the trial? What does involvement of the trial entail for that participant? Are there required visits? Are there required tests? Are there required biopsies? What is the schedule of events for those required elements? And if it's a therapeutic trial and a new drug will be used, what is that drug? What's the rationale behind using that drug? How is that drug administered? And it's really from that consenting process that people begin to understand sort of an outline of the rationale behind the trial, what's involved in the trial, what the schedule would be like for participation in the trial, and then what the trial is hoping to achieve.
So as we mentioned, you work a lot with sarcoma and in particular gastrointestinal stromal tumors. Why is it important, especially for these rarer cancers, that people enroll in these trials?
Yeah, so you know, it's so cancer is moving, and cancer clinical trials research is moving so quickly right now with the advent of new classes of drugs, new types of trying to treat the tumor rather than the traditional, what we call cytotoxic chemo, kind of the chemotherapy that we've always thought of as sort of going in and trying to kill the cancer cells, but in the same time injuring some of the normal cells around. So cancer therapeutics has really evolved to be much more rational as we're beginning to understand the biology. So using targeted therapies and using biologic therapies, using immunotherapies, cellular therapies, all different types of things. Rare tumors pose an interesting challenge because they're rare. And but because a cancer is rare in the overall scheme of all cancers, it doesn't mean it's rare to the individual that it impacts. To that person, it's not rare. To that person, it's impacting them. And we owe it to patients with rare tumors to ensure that we have clinical trial opportunities and novel therapeutics to understand better those diseases, whether rare or common, because when it happens to you, it's happening to you. So in the rare tumor community, I think that it's been a great collaboration actually between, in the sarcoma community, I can speak for, there's great collaboration across different sarcoma centers, as well as with the sarcoma patient communities, to try to leverage awareness when new trials are available, new strategies of therapeutics are available, and to try to make those trial opportunities available to people that are interested in trying novel therapeutics to help move the field forward.
So what's the process like between, you have a clinical trial, and how long does that typically last? And how long till a drug starts a clinical trial until it potentially gets FDA approval if it works and does well?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So for therapeutic clinical trials, it depends a lot. That question's very variable. Let's just say, start by saying that. But some of the drugs that we've been involved with recently in the GIST space, for example, have gone from what we would call a first in human clinical trial, which is just what it's the trial is just what it says. It's first in human. So it's the first time that you're using the drug in a human being. From first in human to approval, usually in some number of years. And that's because from first in human, the first in human trials are really, you're trying to make sure they're the first and foremost, you have to be sure these drugs are safe. You're putting a new compound into a person, and it's with the lofty goal of controlling their disease and helping to improve their outcomes. But while you're doing that, you also need to be sure you're not causing more harm than good and that you understand the side effects. And that first in human experience includes not only identifying the toxicities and making sure things are safe, but also typically those studies are designed to help figure out what's the right dose to give people. So that component, that first in human, or what we call a first in human phase one study, that can take a couple of years because you need to be thoughtful and judicious to be sure you're not, that you're seeing the benefit that you want, but importantly, at the same time, that you're not causing more trouble than good. And as you go through that experience where you're identifying the dose, defining the safety profile, looking for the activity that you're hoping to see, you then begin to plan, okay, we think we can give this safely. We think we know the dose. We're seeing activity, but now we need to do something a bit more definitive to make sure that that preliminary activity we see is real and will be applicable to a broader set of people with this disease. And that's usually what comes after phase one. Sometimes that component can be built into a phase one and what's called an expansion cohort, and that can lead directly to approval. So a recent drug in the GIST world that we did that with was a drug called avapritinib, which is a very focused targeted therapy. And that drug went from first in human to approval all in the same study within a matter of a few years. A similar drug called ripretinib went from first in human, then right into a definitive phase three, which is a larger study, and then to approval, again, also in a number of several years. So I think that that's pretty common, is a few years of a process.
So patients often may have the misconception that, oh, if I join a clinical trial, it's last resort, or I might be given a placebo, not treated at all. And, you know, this cancer is going to ultimately, you know, cause my demise. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, that's so important. And you're right. Lots of people appropriately ask that question. And I think that firstly, it's important to know that everybody's cancer journey is unique. And everybody faces this journey and travels this journey in the way that people have to do it in the way that's best for them, that's most consistent with their value structure, what's important with them, important to them, and the choices that make have to fit for them. So that's like the most important thing, is that there's no only one path through this. There's many paths, and it has to be personalized to what's right for the person that's going through this. With that said, it's also important to know, as I mentioned earlier, there's lots of different types of clinical trials. And frequently, actually, especially in the sarcoma space, you know, if we have an interesting novel therapeutic that we think would be interesting to understand efficacy of, we will definitely offer it as an earlier line therapy. We don't look at clinical trials as a quote unquote last resort. We often are learning so much about trials in people earlier on in their journey. And, you know, it's balancing what's available in the clinical trial space with what are the currently available therapies and how well do they work. If we have a therapy that's currently available that we know will be a home run for a person, we of course always tell them that. And that has to be taken into consideration when the trial option is being considered. Or if there's a clinical trial, let's say, that includes a standard therapy that maybe someone would be getting outside of a trial, but perhaps a new drug is added to it to see if it can make that standard therapy work better. So I think in general, you know, just, I know I've been talking a lot, but just in summary, trials definitely are not exclusively for last resort, and understanding what the trial is, what it's trying to ask, how it fits into the non-trial options in terms of overall choices is really important to talk about with your medical team, so that you can really look at your whole menu of choices as you're moving it forward. The other point that you asked about was placebo. So some trials are indeed randomized so that the computer decides which treatment patients get. People will always know that going in, what's randomized, what isn't. Many trials are not randomized. And if there is a placebo component to a trial, that's always disclosed. And that has to be part of the decision-making process that a patient has to consider in whether or not participating in a trial. Oftentimes, trials that have a placebo in them the way I consider many placebo trials, at least in the space that I work, is that I consider placebo like a functional observation. It's like if you're at a point in your disease where observation alone may be considered a standard option, in a study that might be replaced with a placebo. You know, you may be randomized to either a novel therapeutic or a novel intervention or placebo, where placebo is functional observation. So when I talk to patients about consenting to trials or considering trials that have a placebo, that's the framework that I put it in. And if the patient or if the person says, I would never be comfortable observing at this point in my disease course, then that means it's not the right trial for them.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at Cure Magazine.